welcome to Business Law and More, the podcast that's all about the journey, not just the destination. My name is Rina. I'm a lawyer, business owner, and managing partner of Cosbond. This podcast is for creative entrepreneurs where we discuss business insights, legal hurdles, and more to help you build a business and life that you love. Thanks for spending time with me today. Turn up the volume and let's begin. So today I'm joined by Tebby Adejohn, who is a consultant. She is a dispute resolution lawyer and a very scary one at that as well. We're going to be talking about cease and desist letters. So Tebby, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me, Rina.
We're talking about cease and desist letters. Now, that's always such a tongue twister, isn't it? It might be because I've got my braces on, but it's such a tongue twister. What is that? It gives it away because it's a letter, but just give me an overview of what that is.
Cease and desist letters, it's a form of letter of claim or letter before claim. And as the kind of title of the letter suggests, cease simply means stop and desist means you do not repeat the action that you're taking, which is usually it's supposed to be an unlawful activity. And you're basically asking them not to partake in whatever that activity is in the future. So that's the basic meaning of a cease and desist letter.
It's a warning letter, isn't it, actually?
It is a warning letter.
A bit of a red letter warning.
It's definitely a warning letter. That's a very good way of describing it, because it's basically warning you that if you carry on doing whatever you're alleged to be doing, that there are going to be serious legal consequences, such as injunctive relief or whatever legal action is appropriate in the circumstances. So yes, it is definitely a warning letter, and it covers quite a wide range of unlawful or alleged unlawful activities.
So just before we move on to the different areas that we can use it, so this cease and desist letter, do we have to, or is it, has it got to be sent out before you bring any sort of claims, or yes, is this okay?
Yes, it's definitely advisable to do so, simply because if you then, with any kind of court action or legal proceedings, it's highly advisable now, and it has been for some time, it's highly advisable to send some kind of letter giving the opportunity, yeah, because obviously the overriding objective is to try and settle any dispute amicably. So a cease and desist letter, yes, it's strongly advised that before you basically rush off to court and seeking an injunction, that you give the other party the opportunity to resolve the situation before you go to court. And if you don't do that, then obviously the court will then be looking at that on the issue of costs, because it's frowned upon by the court if no opportunity to resolve it is demonstrated. But definitely, it's something that's advised to be done before you actually rush off to court.
Just to, talking about this overriding objective, just to recap on that, it's basically the whole point is that before you go to court, the parties try and settle and do everything possible to try and settle outside of court. That's generally what the overriding objective of dispute resolution is, right? Is that right?
Yes. It's really to try. Court should be a last resort. Mm. Court should not be the first port of call when an issue arises. It should be something that is when you're left with no other alternative, because either parties haven't been able to come to some amicable resolution, or the other party is simply not engaging with any kind of correspondence with you. That's when you say, okay, I've done what I need to do. I've done the needful, and they're still here. We're still in the situation, and I'm being caused damage potentially by the situation still being present. Therefore, I need to go to court.
Do you find it difficult to manage clients who sometimes, you know, when they come and they are full of excitement, is a better way of putting it, that they're going to go to court and they're going to bring this claim, and to kind of reel them in a bit to say, look, this is the overriding objective. That must be really difficult sometimes to manage clients who instruct you with that real excitement, is a better way of putting it, that they are going to go to court and they're going to win, and then this battle is going to happen, and you have to reel them in to say, hang on a minute, look, we have to follow a process and we have to try this first.
Yes, absolutely. That can be difficult. You've got to manage your clients' expectations, because I think sometimes people have maybe a very simplistic view of taking the matter to court or taking legal action against somebody. In theory, like you said, somebody's done something, somebody's doing something that you deem unlawful, so on and so forth. You will just want to take them to court. But you also have to consider litigation is a very costly exercise, potentially.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, there is a consideration in relation to the value of claims now and the cost that you're likely to recover. Because for now, since I think October 2023, if you have a claim that's less than 100,000, the cost that you're likely to recover, even if you're successful, is very limited because of the fixed cost rule now for claims under 100,000. So it's very important to manage a client's expectations. So yes, you've got to reel them in and say, look, this is what we have to do first. A proper letter of claim that is compliant with the pre-action protocols, civil procedure rules must be sent first. With cease and desist letters, you may have a little bit more flexibility in terms of like deadlines that you can give them to comply and so on and so forth, because you might be threatening injunctive proceedings and the matter may be very urgent and therefore needs remedying very urgently, depending on the kind of damage that's being caused. But the process still has to be followed. It's still advisable and under all circumstances that a letter is sent, some kind of warning is sent before you take that action of going to court. And so you have to explain to the client, look, this is the situation. These are the risks. This is the protocol that we have to follow.
Yes. Usually could end up losing a lot more, right? In terms
yeah,
of
absolutely.
The judge says,
absolutely,
actually, you didn't really try to settle this. So yeah, we penalize you even if you win, which isn't
right,
the best position to be in.
Correct. And obviously, if you haven't warned them of this, then obviously you know what's going to happen if that consequence does occur. You know, they're going to be looking at you, straight at you. Why didn't you warn me about this? And so it's very important that you set out what the requirements are before they go to court. And another thing in terms of cease and desist letters that's quite important is that you've got to have your facts right from the outset. A cease and desist letter needs to be legally and factually correct.
That's what I was going to ask you, actually. What does it include? I mean, could we have things in there to say, it would have the obvious that this is what you've done, this is what you've potentially breached or however it works. But could you have in there that actually, if you don't comply with this by this date, then this is what we're potentially going to do. And do you then have to follow through with that?
Absolutely. So is often in terms of, you know, that's what the purpose of a cease and desist letter usually is. So it sets out whatever the lawful or infringing conduct is. And as I said, it can be used in a wide variety of different cases. And yes, you obviously have to state what remedies you're seeking in that letter, what you want them to do to put things right and when you want them to do it by. Yes, usually with cease and desist letters, a deadline is set that they have to basically comply with your demands by this time, failing which you could take injunctive action or whatever other action that you deem to be fit after that period expires. Yeah.
How do you serve that letter? Is email fine? Do you have to do it by special delivery or do you knock on their door or how is it served?
Actually, a lot of letters nowadays are served by email. It has become an acceptable way of serving documents. I think if personally with service, my personal view, particularly if you're serving it on an individual, I think if you're basically, you know that there's another solicitor on another side, then yes, email, I think, is something that could be done in terms of serving. It's acceptable service because of the fact that it's an actual active solicitor on the other end. But say if with these kind of letters, oftentimes you're actually serving on the individual themselves. They may instruct the solicitor once they receive that letter, but before that time, you would be serving it on them. So first of all, you have to make sure that you've got a valid address for them. If you do know their email address, then obviously an email address would be great as well, having a valid email address for them. But me personally, I would always ensure any such letter is served by way of recorded delivery, preferably special delivery, but if not, first class recorded delivery. So you've got some kind of evidence that the letter has been received and signed for.
Yeah.
All right. Because obviously some people can try and evade service, claim that they never received any letter. They don't know what's going on. How am I in court? I never knew about this. It's a lot more difficult to prove that or to establish that if you've actually got proof of a signature with a date of when it was received.
You can't argue with that, can you?
You can't argue with it. I would always recommend, particularly if you're serving a letter of claim or cease and desist letter on an individual person, I would always, regardless whether it's an individual, whether it's a company, regardless, I would say recorded delivery is the way to go.
Yeah. And so going back to this letter, and we send it before any action or any real sort of court or legal action. So give me some examples of where we would use this. Now, what comes to mind initially, and I've seen this, is usually in intellectual property. matters, but I know it can be used in lots of others. And I remember seeing once a letter regarding a trademark and basically saying, look, your client is potentially infringing our client's trademark. And actually it went further because it didn't just say, just stop doing this and acknowledge it. It went further. I remember, Temi, it said, actually, give us an undertaking. You'll never do this again. But also tell us when and how you've used this and how much income you've generated from using or, you know, piggybacking off our client's registered and protected mark. And then obviously the next thing after that would be, well, you need to send that to us. But it didn't get that far.
Yes. In terms of the trademark, as you said, it's definitely used in cases where intellectual property is misused. So cease and desist letters are very crucial in the beginning of any kind of dispute over intellectual property. So trademark and copyright infringement, passing off, the whole kind of range of trademark or copyright disputes, you would often use a cease and desist letter. It will also ask for, could be an account of damages being asked, being requested, or yes, like you say, an account of profits, any of those type of things, because oftentimes with intellectual property and a trademark or a name that's been built, that's been used to obviously market a brand or something like that, over a period of time, goodwill is built up. And then if somebody comes along and basically is an imposter pretending to be that brand or basically trying to cause enough confusion that members of the public who thought that they were dealing with one particular brand are actually dealing with another, but they wouldn't know that. Therefore, you would be suffering financial damage, potentially, and also damage to your brand and to your name. And this imposter could be profiting from all of that. So yes, oftentimes, as part of requirements for the recipient of a letter in those kind of circumstances, it could well be making sure or ensuring that they also get whatever profits should have been directed to them. They'll obviously want to see evidence of what has been done, what profits have been generated, that type of thing, what kind of customers, how many customers have been accumulated possibly, all those type of things arising from that breach. Yes, that can often be one of the demands found in a cease and desist letter. And coming to that, the kind of circumstances, that a cease and desist letter can be used. It's quite a wide variety. Intellectual property is definitely the most obvious one, but it can be used in harassment, defamation, other forms of unlawful conduct, like in property matters, like such as trespass, nuisance, of a right of way, that type of thing.
That's really interesting because I never actually thought of it being used for breach of restrictive covenants, whether employees or even in post-corporate transaction matters where the seller's promised not to do something and then goes and does it, or employees when they move on and they said, we won't contact this client or do anything, and then they've done that. Actually, the cease and desist letter could work before bringing any sort of claim or anything. Never thought of that, actually. Absolutely. It's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. It's used in a lot of different types of cases. It's something that should be taken very seriously if it's received. And if you're the person who wants to send it, I would strongly suggest seeking legal advice before you do so also. Because, as I said, you need to be coming from the correct legal position before you send anything. It's not a case of, oh gosh, I don't like the fact that this guy's parking in my parking space. And I'm not even talking about parking spaces in your driveway. I'm talking about on a public road. That's the spot I like to park at. I'm going to send them a letter. Try doing that and you're not going to have any legal process. A solicitor would be best to advise you in that regard.
Fantastic. So lots of different areas to do this. So I suppose the kind of takeaway is if you receive one of these letters, don't bury your head in the sand, because usually there are time constraints and consequences if you do, and to seek legal advice as quickly as possible, because what that will do is mitigate it from escalating any further and more costs and time and so on. And also, if you're on the other side of it and you think, actually, look, somebody has just done something that they were not supposed to do, and rather than not doing anything at all, they have got some recourse, and it doesn't mean spending thousands of pounds and going to court. It could be just this one letter, which actually has the desired outcome.
Absolutely. And that is the whole point of a cease and desist letter. They don't prevent the recipient from continuing with that activity. Mm-hmm. They can be used to outline what further legal action will be taken if the activity doesn't cease. So it warns, it gives a very stern warning to the recipient what legal action will be taken if they do not comply. It's something that you should not ignore. And it can be very difficult if you're somebody who maybe you just started this brand and you're just starting out and you then receive a cease and desist letter from this company. It can be very intimidating.
Yeah.
It can be very intimidating. But don't bury your head in the sand, because they may have all these kind of demands and they might be demanding for you to pay big sums of money and so on and so forth. But the key is, don't panic. Seek legal advice.
They're meant to be scary to actually do what it's supposed to do and to get the result.
Absolutely. But the main thing really that you want when you send that kind of letter is for the recipient to engage, because there can always be a solution found. When you receive that kind of letter, or when you're sending that kind of letter, the assumption is that the position that the person is coming from is a strong one. So in those kind of circumstances, you've got to be prepared to yield something. But obviously, you're likely going to have to stop whatever you're doing. But there's always a way that something can be resolved. Yeah, so the key is, if you receive something like that, do not panic. Seek legal advice. See if a compromise can be reached.
Yeah,
9 times out of 10, it can.
It can. Yeah. And we've seen this as well. We always try and resolve something before it gets escalated and out of hand. So you've summarized that really well, Temi. That's been really insightful. And next time we'll talk a little bit more about the other areas of litigation, if you'll join me again.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure to.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Temi.
Thanks for having me, Rina.
Thanks for listening to Business Law and More, a Cosbon podcast. Before we go, if you enjoy the podcast, please follow and subscribe to the show, share the podcast or tell a friend about it, leave us a review, and stay tuned for more next week.